Hello and welcome to Connectivity episode 339. I am your host for today, Alex DeFreitas, and I am not joined by either John or Neil. I'm here with Matt Zawaniak,
Castlevania GBA Game Club Reunion Tour,
and Joe DeVader.
So Castlevania Dracula X is a bad remake of Castlevania Rondo of Blood.
But really, let's talk about the Castlevania DS games. That's what we're really here for.
That's like the exact joke I made to John and Neil earlier.
That's next year. We'll get to it.
We'll save it. So we're actually, what we're here to do is just to fill in, because John and Neil are both out for different reasons. But we still have some time today to get together and fill in an episode for y'all. So I think we're just going to start off with the big one. Matt, you're playing Nier Automata.
Yeah.
On Switch.
Yeah, so
it's not a cloud version too. It's a native port.
Yeah, no, it's not. Which is wild, I think. So Nier Automata is one of my favorite games ever made. I played it back in 2017 on PC, and it's a little funny that this might be a better port than that one.
Woof.
Because the PC port was famously messed up when it came out.
Oh, Square is infamously terrible at PC ports. Like, they've never put out one that wasn't a disaster, at least at launch.
Yeah, ever. So it's better now because people misreported that the Xbox Game Pass PC version was like a new port that was better. That's not actually true. That's not what happened, but that's what people believed. And people started review bombing it on Steam for how bad the port was, like, immediately. So Square was like, yeah, we're gonna fix up the Steam version. But so we're playing the Switch version now. And I imagine maybe a couple Nintendo fans out there don't totally know what Nier's about, because there's never been a Yoko Taro game on Switch, I think, or on any Nintendo system.
Now, isn't he part of the voice of Cards?
Oh, I haven't played that, so it's not real.
I mean, that's fair. I haven't either. I think he's involved with
Absolutely. It is totally fine. The music is great.
Well, yeah, the music I know for a fact is Keiichi Okabe, and that he does not miss. He's great.
I'm going to bring up Yoko Taro's mobile game, Sino Alice, because it kind of describes why I never played Voice of Cards, and also is a good introduction to Yoko Taro for people that may not know what he's about. He was asked in an interview why Sino Alice uses fairy tale characters instead of coming up with original characters. And the answer that he gave was because it's a lot cheaper and easier to use characters that are already established, and since they're public domain, they don't need to pay any licensing. And when the follow-up question that he got was, what would you say to someone who's really excited to play this game? He said, why? That's a waste of your time.
Yoko Taro is a beautiful, beautiful man whom we do not deserve, and also he should probably be in a home.
So that's the idea that we're getting into with the Nier franchise here. Nier Automata is a Yoko Taro game through and through, as it should be, as like the fourth or fifth game in the Drakengard metaverse, as it were. And it's Nier, the original Nier, back in, I think it was like 2007, was when it released on PS3 and Xbox. It was like this cult classic game that people were like, the story is so good. Like, the writing is incredible. Game sucks, though. Like, it's real bad to play. And so Nier Automata was Square Enix going to Yoko Taro and saying, okay, people really like your stories, but you need to make a good video game this time.
You need to make a game that people enjoy playing.
Did they go to Yoko Taro, or did they go to Platinum Games?
They went to Yoko Taro, and then they went to Platinum Games.
So, Nier Automata is written and directed by Yoko Taro and developed by Platinum Games. And you can feel that in the combat, because the combat it's super smooth, super cool, and the way that it plays is very reminiscent of Platinum character action games. You can do these cool combos with your sword and melee attacks. You can on the fly swap between preset combinations of your weapons so that you can get totally different movesets in the middle of a combo, and you can have a different weapon assigned to your basic attacks and your heavy attacks. And all the while, you've got a little floating robot dude with you that can just fire bullets at an enemy to just keep the damage going. And it flows so well, and it's not as super intense as Platinum's character action games are. It's kind of baby's first Platinum game in a few ways, but the result is a game that's really easy to pick up and feels as satisfying as character action games can get sometimes. They made Nier a good game, but the reason that Nier is so beloved is for its writing and story, and I think that is what the focus of the game's appeal is for most people, is that Yoko Taro is really experimenting with the idea of video games as storytelling in ways that most people do not, where like game mechanics are written into the story in very particular ways, and he's bringing up a lot of philosophical ideas and concepts to the point that like characters in the game are literally just named after philosophers. You've got a character named Jean-Paul, you've got a character named Engels. It's like literally classical philosophers are characters in this game. And this one specifically is about androids in a post-apocalyptic world who are just left fighting, and their entire purpose and life is just fighting for the sake of humans that they've never seen, never met, that are hiding away in safety. And a lot of the philosophical themes that it deals with are ideas of like, what does it mean to be alive? What are emotions and purpose when you are created for one, when you're just created to fight and do nothing else? And it hits this with like very, very strong emotional beats sometimes, because I think Yoko Taro's greatest strength as a writer is in the emotional theming of his characters. So this is a game that affected me a lot when it first came out. Like I think back to like when I got to the end of this game and I was just like literally sobbing through the ending.
Mm.
Because it was just a very powerful story to me. And I'm very, very, very excited to like have a chance to shill this game again. Because it one of my favorite games ever made. I absolutely love it. And everyone should play it, I think.
The question is, though, is should they play the Switch version?
So I would say that...
Is 2B's ass still super big on the Switch?
I did ask John about Square Enix's tweet about how 2B is, and I quote, just as beautiful on Switch. And his response to that tweet was, the geometry on her hair has been cut down and her textures are a little lower resolution. But other than that, so this is
geometry on her head. No one's looking at her hair, John Rareton.
So I'm going to qualify this by saying
Tubi has a very nice hairstyle. I like her design a lot.
I'm going to qualify this by saying you guys know what to expect from a Switch port by now. You know that this is going to be the worst performing version of the game, but it's turning out to be kind of one of those miracle ports. I think it's a lot like The Witcher, where it's way more functional and solid than I ever expected it to be. It's the only version of the game that is locked at 30 FPS instead of 60. So that's a little disappointing, but that's kind of the worst of it. Like everything else just looks like you're playing the PC version on low settings, and it keeps that 30 FPS pretty consistently. I've seen a couple dips here and there, but there's nothing where it's like, oh man, this is struggling to run. Like it's actually doing a really competent job here. And I don't have like the full results of John looking at the footage and like really comparing it to the PlayStation version. By the time you're hearing this, we should have a video up on our YouTube channel, but it's Wednesday night right now. I don't see that yet. And it's astonishing that John was counting the resolution, and it's almost always at the full 1080p.
Oh, nice. I was not expecting that.
We're not confidently going to say it is always at 1080p,
right?
But every time John checked, it was. Like, every single frame that he paused and counted, I believe. He keeps thinking that, like, he needs to double check his math, but when you're taking a sample of 30 pixels and counting 30 back on a 1080p image, it doesn't take a mathematician there.
Yeah.
There's a little bit of anti-aliasing there, too, which even Nintendo hasn't figured that out. And the only compromise is the textures are a little muddier, and it runs at 30 FPS, which, like, frankly, if you're playing third-party games on Switch, you're used to that.
Mm-hmm.
That's just the reality here. I'm astonished that this game runs as well as it does. Like, I've got it open in handheld mode right now, and obviously, if it runs at 1080p docked, it's running at 720, the maximum 720p resolution in handheld mode perfectly.
Right. Yeah.
And, like, I'm looking at this on Switch, and I could almost believe that, like, I pulled up a YouTube video of the PC version here. It's actually incredible. I don't know how they pulled it off, but this is one of the better Switch ports I've ever played, I think. I don't know that there is a third-party game that that I think runs this well besides The Witcher. And even then, The Witcher compromises its resolution all over the place.
Right.
We were talking about a couple days ago about how, like, in retrospect, it's not really that surprising because Square seems to, in terms of third parties, I think they make more Switch exclusives or games that start as Switch exclusives. Most of those have gone to, like, PC and stuff too. But they, more than anybody else I can think of, like, they've got Octopath and they have Live Alive just this year.
Harvestella, Dealfield Chronicle.
The Voice of Cards games. Like, yep. They make a lot of stuff that's Switch first. So it's not, I guess it's not super surprising that they would have, like, they know their way around the hardware, I guess. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And, like, obviously we look over at Kingdom Hearts and be like, oh boy, you sure fucked that one up. But, like,
don't get me started.
But they didn't fuck that one up in the porting process. They fucked that up the moment that an executive in a boardroom decided it was going to be a cloud version. Like, that's, I don't even think that's relevant to this conversation.
Yeah. Right. It's a whole different beast.
Like, evidently, yeah, Square Enix knows their way around the Switch hardware. And actually, the port technically isn't even made by Square Enix, though. It was made by Virtuos. And evidently, they're really fucking good at this. Because they made, they also made ports of, like, Dying Light, XCOM 2. They made the BioShock ports, the Outer Worlds
XCOM
ports.
2. They need to go back and fix it.
Yeah, I've also heard not fantastic stuff about the Switch versions of BioShock, but maybe I'm making that up in my brain. I feel like I've heard that those ain't great.
Did they do Dark Souls on Switch too? Because that audio compression is awful.
No, that was all FromSoft, as far as I'm aware. Okay.
They did help with that.
Oh no!
Yeah, I'm on Google right now looking at them.
Evidently, they've stumbled their way through this until they figured it out. So I guess the track record isn't nearly as good as this, but
I mean, they've done it a lot, so maybe they have the experience. But yeah, I guess this is where they knocked it out of the park.
Yeah, they really did. I don't think it's reasonable to have expected this to run at 60 FPS on Switch, and otherwise, like, there's nothing wrong with this. There's nothing wrong with this. Like, okay, some of the textures are low resolution, I guess. It's not that bad, really. It looks fantastic, I think.
Yeah, that's the thing that I usually, like, trip up on a lot when people talk about Switch versions. Don't get me wrong. A lot of Switch versions of games that weren't made for the Switch, terrible. They're bad. Like, really, really, really bad. But there are certain times where it's like, why would you play the Switch version? Because I can play it handheld, and it's not that bad. Like, I don't care if the textures are slightly muddier. Does the game still play good? All right, cool.
It's 720p on a 720p screen.
Like, I'm fine. It doesn't
matter.
Pixel
density is a thing.
And this one does run really well. Like, yeah, it sucks on my 4K TV that the Switch can only output in 1080p, but, like, it's hitting 1080p. Like, that, it's the best that it could be on Switch. Mm-hmm. Like, literally, Nintendo doesn't even get their games to be 1080p half the time.
Oh no, I'm playing Xenoblade Chronicles 3, and that looks like a bad port of itself.
Yeah.
Half the time.
I was under the impression that's just how Xenoblade games looked.
Yeah, I mean, that's also...
Not
that's also
on it. Wii. Xenoblade 1 on Wii was immaculate.
I've seen screenshots of Xenoblade 1 on Wii, Matt, and I can tell you for a fact that's not the case.
Yeah, those character models look like paper mache.
Did you see them in Dolphin upscaled to HD?
No. That's cheating.
Yeah, well, that's where they look worst. No, that's what I was gonna say. If you see it on its original intended resolution on a CRT television, Xenoblade 1 on Wii looks incredible.
I don't know. I've just seen screenshots of the Wii version. I don't know if they were on Dolphin or not. I don't know.
Were they in HD?
I don't know.
Were you looking at them in a CRT in 2012?
Look, man, they were Google image search results, and I don't even remember why they were there. I don't know what you want me to tell you.
I want you to tell me that I'm right, because I am. But yeah, like I truly cannot imagine this port being better than it is. It's actually kind of mind-blowing. And I'm astonished. It's that good. And it's one of my favorite games ever made. If you have not played Nier Automata, I cannot recommend enough that you play it on whatever platform you can get it on, because it's somehow incredible on all of them.
And the story is still holding up 5 years later, you think?
Absolutely.
Nice.
Zero doubt. And a lot of people are probably worried about, like, oh, well, this is a sequel to Nier Replicant. Like, is it okay to jump right in on Automata? And I'm going to be real. Most people didn't play Replicant before Automata.
Most people were explicitly told not to.
Like, if you look at sales of the original Nier and you look at sales of Automata, most people did not play the first one before they played Automata.
That being said, at least go watch a Let's Play of it, not because you need it for like Automata, but because it's really good.
Well, no, because now the remake exists. That's true.
Now there's a good version of it out there.
Yeah.
Well, if I wanted to play both, should I play one versus the other first?
It's kind of a complicated question, because mm-hmm. So there is some stuff in the original Nier that is relevant to Automata. It is, I would say that there's like literally one scene in the game, literally one scene that does not make sense if you haven't played the original, which, like, again, it's literally one scene. So if you just go in and decide to play Automata first, you're going to be fine. Literally one scene. But that does naturally say you should play Replicant first. But Replicant the remake Replicant added new content that is based off stuff in Automata.
Also, I'll be real, trying to focus on canon in this series is a fool's errand.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
Because that too. There are also stage plays and radio dramas and
which don't matter. They do not matter.
And Drakengard.
And raids in Final Fantasy 14.
Yeah. Drakengard doesn't matter. It doesn't matter. It's canon, but it doesn't matter.
Yeah, those are all canon, and you don't need to know any of them from what I understand.
But also, frankly, I'm going to be real with you. If you play Replicant first, you're probably not going to like it as much, because Replicant's just not as good as Automata. Even the remake, like, there's another podcast that I listened to where the way that they described the remake is it's exactly the same game. But when you pick up the controller, you no longer go, "Yeah." it's dramatically improved, but still pretty jank.
Okay.
So just straight up, Automata is the better game. If you want the highest chance of liking this, just play Automata. If you really want to know the story of the original Nier, the YouTuber Super Bunny Hop has a really fantastic like 20 minute recap of it that tells you everything you need to know. And if you want to like machete order this, play Route A of Automata so that you get invested, then go play Replicant, and then come back and play the rest of Automata.
Fun fact, by the way, do you know why Replicant exists?
Why?
Like why the original Nier exists?
Why?
Because they wanted to make a more mature Kingdom Hearts.
Oh my fucking god.
Because that was the only action game they had in their repertoire up to that point. And they wanted a Kingdom Hearts style game that would appeal to an older audience.
Good.
So you can thank Disney for 2B.
But speaking of, though, I mentioned Route A. And what that means is when credits roll in Nier, you're one third through the game. It's not a multiple endings scenario. It's literally the story's not over. Like, literally, it's like if you finished the original Star Wars and then went, okay, don't need to watch the rest of the trilogy. That's just different endings.
Yeah. That's just the end of a chapter.
Yeah, it like legitimately, actually, when credits roll in near and it says the words ending A, it is not by any stretch of the imagination the end of the game. I cannot stress that enough.
So how long does it take to beat a one full playthrough of Nier Automata with all endings?
So all endings, there's a bunch of joke endings that don't matter.
Okay.
You can get every ending through 100% completion.
Mm.
But all the endings that matter. Back in the day on PC, it took me 28 hours.
Okay. Cool.
So it's not that long.
Yeah.
And route A is probably like 10 hours. Each route, there's three main quote unquote routes. They're not really routes, they're more chapters. But they're each about 10 hours. 30 hours is like my default. This is how long a AAA game is nowadays, like between 20 and 30 hours. So I would say this is a pretty normal length game.
Yeah.
And if you stop at ending A, you're a coward.
I mean, why would you? You've got like two thirds of a game to play.
But so, yeah, Nier Automata, one of my favorite games ever made. It's absolutely incredible. And somehow the Switch version is the best Switch port I've ever played.
Cool. That actually sounds... I'm probably not going to actually play it on Switch. I have access to my brother's PS4, and I'll probably just play his copy on that. But it's fun that like it's kind of back in the spotlight. I think Neil's going to play it, so I'll probably try and play it alongside him and whoever else is going through it.
Yeah, there is technically exclusive content, but it's just DLC costumes.
Who cares?
Unless there's something brand new at the end that I haven't even seen yet. Who knows?
Are they Nintendo costumes, though?
Knowing Yoko Taro, there is something that's like Nier 3. Like, he added a game at the end of the game.
Yeah, the new content that was added in Replicant was not advertised. It just was there.
Oh.
So.
Which is the most Yoko Taro thing that could possibly be.
Final Fantasy 14 is canon to Nier Automata.
Yeah, there's an entire like set of raids in Final Fantasy 14 that are 100% canon and are apparently heavily connected to Replicant
and Dragon Guard.
And potentially pointing to what the next Nier game might be.
But I say again, it doesn't matter because nothing in the stage play was important.
Did I mention that those raids are like 100 hours into Final Fantasy 14? They're in the latest expansion.
I cannot stress enough, though. It doesn't matter. These stories are pretty self-contained.
Yeah, pretty much.
Well, Joe?
Did you know that every single indie game on Earth came out in September?
Yeah, I just have on the list, as far as the breakdown for this episode goes, is just Joe's indie games, because there are so many.
When did that new Konami game come out? That was in the Nindie Direct. So, like, did that come out in September?
What new Konami game? I actually don't remember what you're talking about.
I think it's a remake of Getsufuma Den.
Oh, right. I do remember that. Because I remember every tweet being like, ah, yes, the famous indie studio Konami. I believe that is out, but that didn't come out in it didn't come out in September if it is out.
Oh, it was like February.
Yeah. It's like when people call Cuphead an indie game. It's like, really?
I mean, technically Cuphead is more of an indie game than a game published by Konami is, to be fair.
Cuphead was an indie game that was going to go bankrupt until Microsoft was like, yo, here's $20,000. Finish it for us.
And now it's in Smash Brothers. So,
yeah, well, that's why I was kind of weirded out when Yacht Club like kickstarted their new game. I trust them to be like, yeah, we know we need it, et cetera, et cetera. But like when your character's in Smash,
when you have an amiibo,
when your character is an amiibo, I don't feel like you need crowdfunding to fund your game anymore.
Mm-hmm.
Like when you've gotten that level of notoriety. But then again, money in video games, not really that. Doesn't work that way.
And it might be more of a marketing thing than like an actual fundraiser thing.
So which indie games did come out in September?
Well, the first one is one that was made for me and for nobody else in the world, called Wayward Strand, which I really, really, really liked. It is a game about a hospital that is built inside of an airship, like a decommissioned airship that's still flying in the air, but they built a hospital in it. Don't ask why. The actual in-world justification when somebody asks why would they make it into a hospital was, why not? Which, hey, I can't argue with. But you play as a kid who is dragged to work with her mom, who's the head nurse in this hospital, and dropped in the elderly ward, and you just walk around and hang out with old people for 3 days. And genuinely, I really liked it. No one else in this call. Well, somebody in this call might enjoy it. I don't know. It's short, to be fair.
I like Majora's Mask, but it's also about people about to enter death in 3 days.
But it. Hey. No spoilers. No, nobody that you meet actually dies in the game. I'll come out and say that. There, okay. The death is a subject that is covered, but it's not explicit. It doesn't explicitly happen while you're at the hospital.
Mm.
But like the characters are all really neat, and you've got like the sweet old grandma, and you got the really, really angry and mean grandma. And you have a character, literally my favorite character in the game, doesn't talk. Completely nonverbal the whole time. Doesn't communicate in any way, shape, or form. She's my favorite character in the entire game. It's a really neat game, I think. But it's for a very, very specific subset of people called me. And I had actually been looking forward to this game for a really long time. So I'm glad it had finally come out. A game that some people, I think, should really look into, though, is a game called Beacon Pines.
I think I've seen a little bit of this one. It's on Game Pass, right?
It is.
Noted sponsor of NWR Connectivity.
Yep.
Beacon Pines is a game about basically the characters in a storybook, essentially, where it's very narrative, and it's a lot like an adventure game. You play as a kid. That lives in a small town, and you're trying to solve some mystery. There's some weird shit going on in this town, and you kind of got to figure out what it is. But the way it works is that every once in a while you'll hit a scene where it will then like zoom out of the story and show you the book and be like, all right, so in this situation, this meant they had to blank. And throughout the story, you find like charms that are represented by a single word, like a single verb, essentially. And you can select one of those words to go in that blank space. And depending on what word you pick, the story could go in a completely different direction. And it is like very good at kind of seeming like it is a little bit on rails while not feeling like it. Like it hides it pretty well. But it is like most of these choices are going to lead you to a bad ending, but the bad ending always gives you more information that can then be used in other branches. And it also helps that you don't have to replay the whole game to get to these spots, because you can just literally go right back to any of these spots ever.
I was about to say, it almost, with that setup, sounds like it could be like a roguelike kind of thing.
It could be, but it's all very, it's scripted. It's very scripted.
Okay.
And there's like, you can just go right back to the branching path moment and put in the other word options that you were given.
It's like a choose your own adventure book.
It is exactly like a choose your own adventure book. Actually, that is a very apt comparison. I think it's very charming. It also is a little bit creepy.
Like,
not scary, but like the mystery is very weird. And there's some nefarious shit going on in this town.
Yeah, because the footage I'm looking at, it looks like it's looks very bright and cheery.
Yeah. It's
getting some Night in the Woods vibes from that.
It's not super Night in the Woods specifically because like they're younger kids.
Mm-hmm.
Like Night in the Woods is the way it is because it's about college kids.
Yeah, it's depressed about, like, and sad. Jaded young adults, not children.
But like these kids are like, I want to say middle school at the oldest, like still hanging out in a treehouse fort age. Mm-hmm. And I think it's really, I think it might be one of the more interesting games that's come out this year. It's maybe 5-6 hours long. And like Ooh. Matt said, it's on Game Pass. So if you have Game Pass, like that's a place you can go check it out. I do genuinely think it's neat. And I think it deserves more attention than it has gotten.
Is the good ending satisfying whenever you actually get to it?
Yeah, I was pretty satisfied with it. It's nice. Kind of silly, but I enjoyed it.
Okay.
Yeah. My favorite, though, of the games that I reviewed is an RPG, actually. But, like, I've been describing it as a bite-sized RPG because it's, like, 6 hours long. It is called Jack Move. And Jack Move is a very cyberpunk-style 2D JRPG turn-based game, essentially, that has the Fire Emblem Weapon Triangle in it.
Ooh. What?
Because there are three types of attacks and they all rock, paper, scissors each other.
Nice.
So you have, it's wetware, electroware, and cyberware. Those are the three types of attacks, quote unquote magic. It's you play as a hacker and you're hacking things. And by that, I mean, when you select hack in battle, that's just code for I'm going to run up to you and hack your face with my fist, which I find really good. It's got a fantastic soundtrack. I think the story is pretty well written. And to be honest, I wish there were more RPGs that were this long. I understand the idea that like a lot of people like longer games, and I like longer RPGs. Like I played Final Fantasy VIII earlier this year. That game's bad. It's a bad example, but that's the only RPG I've played.
It's the only one ever.
It's the only one ever. Perfect game. That
it
sucks.
Did get a 10 out of 10 from NWR.
But like it's got a really neat battle system. Music is fantastic. The art is absolutely fantastic. It's another one of those games where like, hey, you should check this out if you like RPGs. Because it ain't going to take much time out of your... I was kind of shocked when I rolled credits so fast. Because I actually did not realize it was going to be that short. But I'm kind of glad it was. Because it didn't have time to let the mechanics feel stale or anything.
Yeah.
And so it's a pretty good game. That's one I think I would definitely recommend to most people. I think.
Is this the one where you described it with like the weird kind of annoying techno babble futuristic speech thing going
yeah.
on?
Yeah. Yeah, it sure is. They like I'm trying to remember like any of it. The word chrome is used in place of cool a lot.
Oh yeah.
Oh my god.
It's just like random tech words, but they're used as slang and it's really weird. I had the same problem with another game I played this year called Haven, where it's a sci-fi game that takes place in like another galaxy and stuff. And they invented their own curse word and it's still super weird. So instead of like dropping F-bombs, it's bloot.
Bloot?
I don't like it when games do that.
I'm like really mixed on it because I think it can be done well. Like, I think Batman Beyond does it really well, mostly because it's barely present in Batman Beyond. That's the thing. It can't be every other word. And the one problem I have with Jack Moore's writing is it's kind of every other word.
Oh man, I say I don't like when games do this. Xenoblade 3 just kind of did it, but Xenoblade 3 didn't make up goofy words. Instead, like, they made real words.
That's what Jack into Move different. Does.
Well, yeah, but like in Xenoblade 3, it was like all like there was a theme to it because it was like the curse word is sparks, and like the like fire is a super important visual theme for the game. Yeah. So all of their curse words are based around fire and spark, like, and snuff. That's cool. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Well, that is, again, that's kind of what Jack Move does, because all of their stuff is themed around like technology, tech.
So this sounds like a good one then.
Yes, I just think they do it too much.
Okay.
That's my only problem. I think they lean into it a bit too hard. But otherwise, like, I think the writing's really good. It does a really good job at, not every RPG nails this, but when you walk around town as the game progresses, like, NPCs change their dialogue and they have stories that they go through. Like, there's this pair of ladies that is my favorite, that at the beginning of the game, when you first like listen in on their conversation, one of them's yelling at the other because her new boyfriend is a mafia runner. And like, you're going to get shot. What the fuck are you doing? And it just sort of goes from there. My favorite NPC is a guy that works at Mafia Pizza, which your pizza in 5 minutes or else. And they never explain what that or else is, but it's pretty heavily implied that the delivery guy gets shot.
I think that's a reference to Snow Crash, because that's like the opening scene is like a pizza delivery with some real high stakes.
I mean, that might be a reference then. It's a really good game. I think it's neat. And I think I might, like, if we have time in like December or some shit, I might drag Matt through it or something on stream. I don't know. Or I might just force him at gunpoint to play it on his own time.
Well, historically, extra time for Twitch streams is obviously what we always have.
Oh, yeah, we've never not had that abundant. Mm. But there are like a couple other, like Moon Scars is one that I haven't given a lot of time to, but that came out at time of recording yesterday.
I have not played that yet, but I did play it in the Steam Fest demo, and it was rad. I really liked that one.
Sadly, but also I'm not too broken up about it, Melatonin was supposed to come out this month and it didn't. It got delayed, which I say I'm not too broken up about it because I've talked about three indie games already that came out in the span of like 2 weeks.
Melatonin is the Rhythm Heaven clone, for those who don't know.
The game where the dev was basically like, I want to make Rhythm Heaven. And then they just blatantly made Rhythm Heaven.
It's like Rhythm Heaven, like low power, though. Like,
The music is not as good because it's hard. Like, that's a high bar. Sunku writes really, really good music for the Rhythm Heaven series, but like, it plays as well as Rhythm Heaven, I think.
Yeah, that's just the thing that like is like really making me kind of disappointed, where it's like, it does definitely play as well as Rhythm Heaven based on the Steam Fest demo that we played, but I just don't like the music as much.
And I don't think the aesthetics are as strong, simply because Rhythm Heaven just has a really powerful sense of weird.
Mm-hmm.
That like only that team seems to be able to do, like, only that team over at Intelligent Systems are the only ones that can do it. But yeah, that was supposed to come out. I feel like there was like another one that I'm forgetting, but the one I like to talk about the most, because it so a game called Potion Permit came out this month.
Oh no.
Potion Permit, for anybody that does not know, did you know that people really like farming games?
I don't think Nintendo fans are familiar with that at all.
Yeah, I've never known a Nintendo fan to ever play a farming game, or to have three in a single direct, or I've never watched a wholesome direct, apparently, where they are 90% of the content.
Mm-hmm.
But so Potion Permit's not a farming game per se, but it's basically a farming game. The only thing holding it back is you don't run a farm. You play as an alchemist. Just a chemist, who shows up in this small town because they have been summoned to be a doctor for the mayor's daughter, who is very sick. And it's said that like a long time ago, the medical association sent other chemists and they completely fucked up the ecosystem with a failed experiment. And so the entire town just fucking hates them. And so this is a big deal that you've been pulled here. And you just become this town's doctor and you have to like run around the wilderness collecting potion ingredients like, you know, flowers and rocks and the severed paw of a bear you have murdered and, you know, that kind of thing. And then you drop all that into a boiling pot of water and you have a potion that cures people, apparently. I didn't know medicine was that easy. I really have been giving my brother-in-law too much credit.
I mean, it kind of is that easy, just with a lot of trial and error beforehand, which I assume the potion guy has done.
Probably. The way potion making works is super weird in that it's a block puzzle where like every ingredient is a different shape of like almost tetramino, but they're not limited to four blocks. And you have to, it'll give you a shape and you got to fill in that shape and you can only use a certain amount of ingredients, et cetera, et cetera. It's weird and super simple and kind of dumb. This game I like, but also hate. Mostly because it came out broken as hell. Oh my god. Oh my god. This game is still so buggy. I'm going to be real. They patched it and it somehow got worse.
Oh no.
And I don't understand. So some of the best highlights. One of the first bugs that I ran into was, you know how in a journal in like an RPG, they'll have like an unread dot on top of a category to let you know, like there's a thing you haven't read in this part of the menu.
Yeah.
It made one of those for a post that didn't exist.
Oh, fuck.
And so that unread icon stayed there for the entirety of my playthrough and could not go away. And that was like a knife in the heart for me. That was a bad start.
How early did it show up?
Oh, this was within like the first hour.
Good.
Yeah. Yeah. That's how you knew. At one point, it deactivated two of my fast travel points for no reason, but it didn't mark that on the map. So if I tried to travel to it, it would fade out and then it would like jerk back to where I was standing and say something. The words it put on screen were localization error, but in the game's font.
Huh.
And I couldn't figure out what the hell was going on because it was only those two sections that wouldn't work. And I had to manually walk my ass back to them and they just deactivated for no reason. I had a point where I tried to fast travel to one location and it dropped me off the map. Like, in a spot where they were storing excess stuff, where I was underneath, I couldn't see the character because I was underneath the like map layer, and I don't know what the fuck happened there.
So is it just the Switch version that's like this, do you know? Like, are the other?
I honestly have no idea because I haven't seen anybody else talk about it. But like the type of error, the type of problems that I was seeing don't feel like your typical like Switch thing. Like one of the biggest things, one of the worst things was that every like 10 minutes, the game would hang for like a full second. And it felt like it was about to crash. And this happened every 10 goddamn minutes throughout my whole playthrough. And it still happened even after it got patched because I kept playing after that.
And like, I am seeing reviews for other versions mention the bugs.
Yeah, so it came out super, super buggy, and which is a shame because I think a lot of stuff around it is good. I like the characters and I like the town, except for one problem. And here's the biggest problem. Fuck, who cares about the bugs? Who cares about the gameplay? There's a really, really hot gambler lady, and she's not a romantic interest. She's not a romance option.
Well, why not?
I don't know. She's single. Her entire story seems to be about her flirting with you. She's not a romance option. You can't marry.
Ready to
her.
Mingle?
It seems like it. She seems ready to mingle the hell out of things. But she also might be a criminal who's only seducing you so you can help her with crimes.
Okay.
Well, that's a plus.
That's, yeah, that's
exactly.
That's
that just makes her hotter.
Okay, so, well, so this game has a customizable player character, right?
Yes.
Gay option, maybe? Saving grace?
Oh, everybody is. No, I try. So I.
Oh,
I,
no.
I thought that.
I mean,
so well,
I mean, oh, I mean, not. Oh, no. That's a good thing. But
yeah, everybody can marry. It's like Stardew Valley. Everybody can marry everybody. Regardless of what gender you play, you can marry any of the.
But there's only
options.
One set of eligible bachelor/bachelorettes.
Correct. Yeah. There are three men and three women, and the problem is most of them are the most boring options they could have picked.
Yeah, then that's not enough. That's not enough options. That three and three.
The mayor's daughter is one of them, which was super weird because when you first get to town, the way that the mayor's daughter is framed made me think she was 12.
Oh, no.
So you can imagine reaction when I was looking through the character list and it said romanceable under her picture.
When's the time skip?
There isn't one.
Okay, hold on. I'm Googling potion permit romance characters. I'm going to give you my
I'll do this.
Well, I can also describe, if you find like a picture of something, I will tell you the characters' archetypes too, because they also picked most of the most boring archetypes.
Here, I'm putting this in our chat. I found something that has all of them.
Okay. So obviously you have Mateo. Mateo is the witch doctor of town. He's the only interesting bachelor.
You know, I can tell.
Yeah, you could tell just from the designs, huh?
Yeah.
Because
like I look at this guy, like, that's a strong design. He looks like a good bachelor.
And then next
to him kind of looks like Neko Arc, I'm not going to lie.
Well, the other two don't have mouths.
They
just have eyes.
Well, that's just the art style. Mateo just happens to have a beard.
Yeah, he just happens to have a goatee. That goatee is doing a lot of work to give his face structure. But like he looks like an interesting character. Whereas like the second one, Rainer, he's the town carpenter. I just described to you the entirety of his personality.
Is he hardworking and nice and means well?
Yeah, pretty much.
Yeah.
Okay. And Zhao is the very, very professional secretary to the mayor.
Oh, the worst archetype.
That's his whole story. Then you have the bachelorettes. And the first one is the only interesting one, being Liano or Lena. I don't know how to pronounce her name, but she's
a pirate. Liano.
She's a pirate. She's a pirate lady. Yeah. She has a hook hand and she's cool. Except all of her friendship stuff requires me to fish, and fishing in Potion Permit is bad. It actively
As
does
it is
not
in all
feel
video
like it
games.
Works.
I will I do it for Liano.
I've yet to find one of these games where fishing doesn't suck.
Twilight Princess has pretty good fishing.
Yeah, but it's not a farming game.
That says you. You wrangle up goats at the very beginning of that game.
Martha looks like the busty barmaid.
Like she's cute, and Martha was the one I was going for before I decided, yeah, no, I'm done playing the game, and then I uninstalled it. But she's also just the waitress. That's it. That's all she is. That's her entire. She's the waitress, and she wants to learn how to cook because she's bad at cooking. That's it.
I see.
And then you have Rue. She's the mayor's daughter. And her story is she's Yukiko. She's just Yukiko Amagi. Oh, man, I live in this town and my family like runs it. But I want to go do my own thing in the big city and leave this small town behind. It's her whole thing.
So that is a trope and not so blatantly stolen from Persona 4 specifically. But
she's
like,
just the first character that comes to mind.
I don't think that makes her more interesting.
It doesn't. Like in terms of the ladies, there is the very hot gambler lady who is great, and I love her. and she can have anything she wants from me. There's also like a tough blacksmith girl who's really cool.
How about the guys? Are there better guys too?
There's a guy who has a split personality where one of them is the town mailman and the other one's a pirate. It's a little weird, but like,
it does sound a little weird.
It's a little bit weird, but like, there's two brothers who are the town cops, and they're single, and one of them fucking hates you, and the other is like, man, who's gonna commit a crime here? Everybody knows everybody. I don't understand what we're doing. It's just, I think the guys have it a little weaker in general across the board, mm-hmm. unfortunately.
Yeah, you can even see that in the romance options. Like Mateo is strong, but then the other two are more boring than the boring girls.
Yeah, they're just look at these guys. That's it. And I think that is one of the most disappointing parts, specifically because romance options are a huge part of these kind of games. If you have the option to marry somebody, you need your options to be interesting.
Yeah.
And Stardew, like, everybody in Stardew is a regular person. Like, you have roughly the same tropes, actually, because you have the girl who really likes fashion, and she's like, nobody cares in this town, I want to go do something else. And you've got the artist girl, and you've got the teacher whose mom is an alcoholic, and she's so sad. And like all that stuff, but like they're written so much more interestingly. And I'm gonna be real with you. I played this game, like I stopped playing last week. I didn't remember any of these characters' names except for Rue.
Unfortunate.
Yeah.
And this is this was one of the games that like people were most positive about coming out of the Steam Fest. So this feels like it really.
This is the one that got. In terms of the like 5 reviews I put out in September, this is the one that got the most attention
mm-hmm.
in general. This is the one that came up as a Google alert on my phone.
Oh, jeez.
And nothing else has ever done that. But don't you worry, Alex. I'm going to tell you about the game that you're going to go buy it like the instant we get off this call.
Which game is this?
Did you know Hololive made a horror game?
Oh God!
So it okay, so
this is a Hololive game. This oh, is yeah, not
this
a
is a Hololive published game starring Hololive personalities.
So just to clarify, this isn't on Switch or anything. This is just a targeted attack at Alex.
Yeah, this is specifically because if Alex wasn't here, I would not be talking about this game.
Okay, just wanted to make sure.
We have a history, listeners. You can learn about that history if you go to twitch.tv/NintendoWorldReport.
The long and short of it is I failed at Mario Party and now I have already done this. I was tasked by Joe to play a Hololive game.
No, you're tasked by Matt. No, you always think it's me.
I keep because me and Joe have talked the most about Hololive together. So that's why I keep on thinking it was Joe. Matt.
That's because I respect you as a human being and don't actually want to shove this down your throat.
And meanwhile, despite I don't respect anybody as a human being except for my Inanis.
Me and Joe have talked about like the controversies that have come out of Hololive streams before. Yeah.
So Hololive Error is a horror game based on a horror series that they made, which I have not watched, but I might watch because it's apparently very short. It is essentially one of those horror games. This is like a haunted house. You walk forward and things happen. Not
is this
that
the entire
simple.
Cast of Hololive or just like just the Japanese or just the
it is
English?
I think about 12 or 13 of the Japanese side. This is entirely Japanese. This series I believe started before English debuted, I want to say.
Obviously I am familiar with Hololive, but I'm sitting here trying to imagine the average listener right now has already turned off the podcast.
For people that do not know what Hololive is, they're VTubers. They're a Japanese company. they do VTubers. They have a branch in Japan, an English branch, and they have an Indonesian branch. And that's basically all you need to know. They're VTubers.
And this is tied into Nintendo because VTuber artists are now designing Fire Emblem characters. So it does
true.
Count. They're... It does count.
Specifically HoloLive artists.
Alex, the person who designed the characters in Fire Emblem Engage specifically designed a HoloLive English.
We talked about that on the deep dive, which you can watch at our YouTube channel, Nintendo, Anywhere TV.
Here's the thing. You don't need to know like anything about HoloLive to play this game. Specifically because while it is the HoloLive characters, they are acting as actors playing characters.
I mean, that's just how HoloLive works.
Yeah, but here's
the
thing.
So we're going through like
the character
two
is not being played.
Acting?
The character is not being played by the person that plays Inugami Karone. The character is being played by Inugami Karone.
That's hilarious. It's like Face Off.
It's really weird. And like, I don't know how to explain it, but the weird nested that like Sora is essentially the main, like not Kingdom Hearts Sora, though that would, somebody should mod that.
Sora is a VTuber.
Sora is one of the is the OG HoloLive member. But she's the antagonist essentially. And it's just the most effective jump scare of the whole game was me walking up to a door, the door being locked, me going, ah, shit, that means I have to turn around, and turning around to see Inugami Karone yell at me to give her friend back and then run away. And it scared the shit out of me.
Like, well, it's effective as a horror game.
Like, you can play this without knowing anything about HoloLive. You're just going to be confused about why this cat girl seems to be a very important character, because they still have like all of their HoloLive stuff on, so like Karone still has her dog ears and her tail,
but she's playing that character as if there is no dog theming.
Exactly, 100%.
Oh my god.
It is the weirdest experience I've ever had.
Is it good?
I think it was fine. Here's the thing. I don't think it was great. I don't think people should be like rushing out to go play it. It was fine. It got some pretty solid scares out of me. It's only like 45 minutes long.
Okay.
It was fine. I had an okay time with it. I can't say that I would go play it again. I mean, maybe I will. I'm thinking if it wasn't on PC, I'd try to stream it. But it, unfortunately, it is only on PC. Switchboard, come on, let's do it. Let's do it, cover. But yeah, it's they're really pushing it too. Apparently, it had a booth at TGS and everything.
Oh,
yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, like bizarre.
This is a real game.
Apparently, you don't go to Tokyo Game Show if you're not a real game and or Yu-Gi-Oh.
Yeah.
But yeah, that's all I have on that. I just had to bring it up because Alex is here, and I'm contractually obligated to bring HoloLive at least once every time I talk to Alex.
I appreciate that. I really do. Is that all of your indie games?
Yeah, that's pretty much it.
Joe's indie game roundup, is it over?
Like I said, there's a bunch more that came out in September, but I didn't play them because I was busy playing all the others. Because
so. You're playing, yeah, four of them. And if you want to check out all those reviews, they are up on the website and the YouTube channel. It was funny, like watching the YouTube channel and just be like, oh, there's a Joe game.
There's another Joe game.
There's another one.
I, at one point, Jordan messaged me and was like, hey, I got this code for you. Are you good to do it? And I was like, yeah. And then like a day later, Jordan would be like, hey, I got this other code. I like, if you're too busy, you're gonna bring it. And this went on for a week until I had five reviews assigned at the same time.
Alrighty. I think we're going to wrap it up with some Splatoon 3 talk.
Putting that after HoloLive. You're going to have to call the episode. I promise we talk about Splatoon.
The episode name is going to be, please don't skip the HoloLive section. We end up talking about Splatoon 3.
That better be the full title. I'll be watching my podcast feed, Alex.
Oh, I intend on making that the title. So Matt, you reviewed Splatoon 3 for the website.
I did.
What did you think?
People didn't like my review.
Yeah.
I gave it an 8. Hated him
because he said he told the truth.
Well, I gave it an 8, so the only conclusion I can draw is that the popular opinion is that this game sucks. So did you like Splatoon 2?
I really did. Truly did.
Then there you go. It's the same game. It's the same game. I said in the review, like when I was going over like Turf War and the ranked modes and all that, like the core multiplayer experience that people actually play Splatoon for, I actually said exact words. I truly cannot think of a single thing that has changed here. Like what do you want me to bring up the weapons that they added? Because they added weapons in post-launch patches for Splatoon 2.
And Splatoon 1.
And Splatoon 1. Do you want to talk about new maps? They added those in post-launch maps for 2 and 1.
The movement options, kind of. And the specials are different.
Oh, the movement options that no one uses?
That I use it pretty often.
Because they're slower?
I'm not sure. I think that the one that's like jumps around might be helpful for like quick pivots. Not good enough to use it. But yeah, the one where you just kind of go up the wall real quick. I think that one's only really good if you're like a roller and you're sneaking up on somebody who's on a tower quickly.
No, I've tested it. It's slower in every circumstance, pretty much.
Does it not? Well, it's slower, sure. But does it like help with like a surprise factor, I guess? Maybe not. I don't know. I don't play rollers.
I don't play rollers either, to be honest, but I can't imagine any circumstance where it'd actually be useful for that.
Right.
Same game. It's the same game. And it turns out Splatoon 2 was pretty good. So Splatoon 3, still pretty good.
Yeah, I think James Jones said in the Discord that Splatoon 3 is probably great if you are a hardcore Splatoon fan. And you're just happy that there's more Splatoon because this is legitimately really, really good and maybe even slightly better. Or if you are very new to Splatoon, if you were like a casual Splatoon fan who was waiting for something different to bring you back, like this isn't it.
Yeah, it's so weird to see this game exist because it's a new entry into an annualized franchise 5 years after the last one. Like, there is exactly as much iteration in this as I would expect from your average Call of Duty. But with 5 whole years in between them, it's frustrating because it feels like a $60 tax for the right to get more updates.
Yeah.
It's essentially $60 DLC that lives on a different cartridge.
Yeah.
Well, it does look significantly better. And the matchmaking,
does it look $60 better?
No, it does not. That's the caveat, is that like everything that I will say about Splatoon 3 being the best version of Splatoon we've ever had is still not $60 better than Splatoon 2. Like this game is really, really good. I'm not sure if it made a case for its own existence well enough. That said, every time I jump into a session and play a bunch of matches with friends, it's still great. Yeah, I don't know. It's weird trying to like balancing this. Like I feel kind of cynical about this, and also I'm really enjoying it.
But how it sounds like very similar to how with a different vein that exists in this something. It feels kind of similar to how I feel about like Pokemon Sun and Moon, and then Pokemon Ultra Sun and Ultra Moon.
Oh yeah,
which is slightly different because Splatoon 3 is, well, is it? No, it's slightly different because Ultra Sun and Ultra Moon were like blatantly marketed as they're sequels and they're the same goddamn game.
Yeah.
But like they didn't add that much. And it just,
I mean, I don't know. I don't know what makes a sequel more than the number went up in the title.
It not being the exact same game. essentially, that's one of them, which I guess muddies the waters a bit here. Huh. But like it honestly felt when those games came out like, oh man, so Pokemon Company just tricked me into spending $50 on like the same game again. Cool.
Well, so the weird thing that's going on here is that I think I would honestly prefer if this came out 1 year after Splatoon 2 for $60, and then the next year there was a Splatoon 4 for $60. Because as it stands now, I waited 5 years for the right to play Salmon Run whenever I wanted and the ability to party up with friends. Those are legitimately the two biggest things that Splatoon 3 added. And if they just went all in and made this an annualized franchise for $60 every year, I could have had those two things 4 years ago.
But also, those are patchable things. Like, those are things that could be added in patches. They're not significant.
Yes, they are. Like, you're right. But that's not the world we live in. The world we live in is Splatoon 3 is a $60 game. And I legitimately wish that we got this exact game for this exact price 1 year after Splatoon 2. And then we'd be on Splatoon 6 by now, which would have enough iteration in it to feel worthy of being called Splatoon 2.
But it would also probably suck. Games don't escape annualization without going bad.
Yeah, I can't get behind this whole, like, let's make it annualized. Despite agreeing with you that it would be nice to have Salmon Run available at all times and good matchmaking with friends earlier, I can't get behind the idea of making it.
What in here isn't an annualized game, aside from the fact that it took forever for us to get it?
I mean, you're not wrong.
Yeah, I see the argument you're making is that this feels like it came out a year after, but it came out five. I get you.
That's the really frustrating part. I feel like. I can't even say Splatoon as a franchise would be in a healthier spot that way, because apparently this is exactly what people want, because it was the fastest selling game of all time in Japan.
Yeah, like, it's selling gangbusters.
Like, it's like, what do you say to that?
I think what you say to that is that Nintendo made the right choice as a business decision.
What you say to that is Aquarium on WiiWare is a 10 out of 10. That's how this feels to me. It's the same feeling I get hearing that Aquarium was the best-selling WiiWare game. It's like, all right, I guess I can't argue with that.
Yeah.
That's what the people want.
Yeah, my Aquarium, for those who don't know, is literally just you kind of customize an Aquarium. It's $5 on WiiWare, and that was the highest-selling thing on the platform.
Not Yule Log? Was there a Yule Log thing on WiiWare?
I don't know.
We will eventually get there if Sered starts jumping into our streams. Yeah, I don't know. I think for me, the biggest thing is like Splatoon, when it first came out, was such a fresh franchise, and it feels like it has so much potential. And so far, like the two sequels have felt like they just, hey, it's Splatoon again, and like it's 20% better this time,
which is it's absolutely bizarre from a company that for the most part with a lot of their other franchises, like we constantly hear about like, oh, they don't want to make a new Star Fox because they don't know what they're going to do different yet. Like, yeah. they want every game to be a completely different thing.
Yeah, you know what? The fact that we don't have F-Zero right now because they don't have an idea for it is insulting with Splatoon 3 right there.
I mean, if you're trying to compare F-Zero and Splatoon, you just gotta look up the sales numbers. Like, that's gonna tell you the entire story.
Yes.
Yeah, but F-Zero but
Splatoon 1 sold
chance.
Over a million on Wii U.
Yes, but don't fucking tell me that you're not making F-Zero because you don't have any ideas for a new gimmick.
Oh, I believe that half the time when representatives from Nintendo are answering interview questions, it's just this like put out some bull crap and save face.
Oh, it's, for sure, but it's the thing they use more than any other excuse.
Yeah. Yep.
And it's kind of extra disappointing because Salmon Run in 2 did legitimately feel like
absolutely.
An exciting new thing. Salmon Run is incredible. It's my favorite way to play Splatoon right now.
Yeah.
And we don't really have anything like that in 3. Table turf is there, I guess, but it's like, first of all, you can't play it online, so what the fuck, Nintendo? But number
and it
two,
isn't really Splatoon. It's a it's decidedly not, a minigame.
Yeah, it's a different game. There's not a single new game mode where you're playing Splatoon. Not one. Not one new game mode.
I know that we're going to have like 2 years of updates to look forward to, but I'm not sure what they would add. They haven't really even hinted at something that would be interesting to add.
New maps, I guess. New maps and
they
guns.
Added Tri-Color Battle.
Allegedly.
Yeah. Well, yeah, I tried playing Tri-Color Battle.
I've yet to see evidence.
I played Splatfest for maybe like 4 or 5 hours and maybe only saw 3 or 4 Tri-Color Battles.
And I assume you were queued up for Tri-Color the entire time, right?
Yeah, absolutely.
I said this on Twitter the other day, but it's like, we can call that embarrassing, right?
Mm-hmm.
Like, it's the headlining new feature of the game, the most original thing that you did. And it's not there. That's embarrassing.
Yeah. Big Man was there. He's the big new feature.
That's actually true. Big Man's existing. Hey, why are Fry's eyes upside down?
I mean, Big Man in the story mode is legitimately the most interesting and unique thing that they've done in the entire game.
But why are Fry's eyes on upside down?
I don't know. I try not to think about Fry.
These are the questions that haunt me.
It's like they looked at Pearl and said, not enough of a gremlin.
Pearl is great. Pearl is fantastic. The thing with me and Splatoon is I don't play Splatoon. And it kind of like I have this weird relationship with it where I wish I did, because I think aesthetically Splatoon is really cool. And I think the music is fantastic. But I just don't. I played a little bit of Splatoon 1 and I played a little bit of Splatoon 2, and just they never grabbed me. And so I did not buy Splatoon 3, because I've come to the point where it's like, maybe it's time to admit that I'm never going to get into Splatoon.
You've got the N64 expansion pack, right?
Yes.
That means you have Octo expansion. You should try Octo expansion.
Maybe. I haven't tried any of the single player stuff either, to be perfectly fair.
Octo expansion is like the exact moment where Splatoon's single player gets good.
But like it's just this thing where, because I don't play a lot of multiplayer games in general. Mm-hmm. They're just not a thing that I like. Big group multiplayer games like that, I'll play with like groups of friends sometimes, but I'm not that person that like sits in a lobby for an hour and like queues up and goes into the, so like Splatoon in general does not appeal to me, but God, I wish it did, because everything else about it is great.
Yeah. I think I'm at the point with Splatoon now where I am honestly more excited if they were to do a spinoff within the universe. I would be honestly very excited to see what they could do outside of the main like model of Splatoon, but like keep the aesthetic, the music, that world.
Yeah,
and it has potential.
It's so weird saying all this while I do still play it a lot, because it is still good. It's just I don't know, man. This doesn't feel like Nintendo. I think that's the weirdest part in here. And like, is this new Nintendo now? Is this the new Nintendo that puts up limited time digital games and then ceases them to exist?
Nukes them from orbit.
Is this the direction that we can expect from Nintendo going forward? I think that's the thing that upsets me the most, because I keep seeing things that Nintendo's doing where it's just like, you're getting worse as a company to me. You were always a dinosaur that didn't understand how the internet worked, but now you're like kind of malicious too.
Yeah. It's definitely looking like that for some of the multiplayer games. Their single player offerings still seem to be rock solid to me. I think the Switch era has been great for those titles specifically, but yes, like a lot of the Mario Sports games and Splatoon not changing it up enough is a bit of a downer.
Mm-hmm. Maybe we don't want to encourage people to listen to the Splatoon part of this episode.
Yeah, it really sucks when a company gets you to buy the same game multiple times. Anyways, you guys looking forward to buying Persona 5 for the third time? That's not a joke. I will be doing that.
I'm really excited to buy it for the first time.
Yeah, and you didn't even play the second one you bought, Joe.
Yeah, I didn't. I sure didn't. I bought the PS4 version of Royal and never even put it in my PS4.
And you can't even play the Switch version portably because you need to save it for Smashterpieces.
Oh, that might not stop me. That was what I was doing with the PS4 version. I was thinking about it. I don't know. We'll see. I also just want to buy it to have it. I'm more excited for 4 and 3 to show up on Switch, but yeah, I find it really funny that we this conversation in the back of my mind. I'm like, so I'm gonna buy a game for the third time in like 3 weeks.
Hey, Royal added a grappling hook, okay?
That's true, it did. And then Smash had it before Royal showed it off, so technically Smash introduced the grappling hook.
It's true.
We're going to get angry emails like we did for Castlevania, aren't we?
I want them.
Oh, yeah. Neil can forward them to me.
Bring it on.
every time the three of us show up on connectivity, people are going to be like, oh, these guys again.
8.0. Splatoon 3 is still good.
No, don't. Alex, don't you know? 8 means terrible. 8 means literally worst game ever made. Legitimately unplayable.
The rating range is just getting tighter and tighter.
I only play games that are an 11, so I don't play video games.
I think we just need to go to like a 2-point rating scale, which is like yes or no.
Some places have done that.
Yeah, there are places that have legitimately done that. It's the rating system is stupid and doesn't work, but there's no better way to quantify it, so fuck it.
And all the aggregate scores websites are like, we demand the 10-point scale.
Hands are kind of tied.
Yeah. Alrighty. Well, if anyone else doesn't have anything to add about Splatoon rating or Nier or Joe's deluge of indie games, I think we can just call it an episode.
Yeah. Well, you know, what's an episode of connectivity without talking about the hottest multiplayer game that you can play on Switch? The seminal shooter that everyone loves. So about Fortnite.
I'll hold him down. You end the show. I'll keep him from getting up and stopping you.
Yeah, so anyways, thank you so much for listening. If you are wanting to follow us on Twitter, you can follow us at ConnectivityNWR. And if you want to leave us an email about your thoughts on Splatoon 3 and whether or not you disagree with us on how it turned out, you can
statistically
email.
You probably do
based on YouTube comments.
Send your hate towards us at connectivity@nintendoworldreport.com, and then John and Neil are going to have to read about it and then report back to us and ask us why are we getting hate mail.
My name is John Rarden, and all of the things that were said are my opinions alone.
Anyways, Joe, Matt, thank you for joining me on this last-minute decision to record an episode without John and Neil.
Evidently, it's the only way I can get on nowadays.
Yeah,
I'm not allowed anymore after Castlevania.
Yeah, that was it. We had like a ban on you showing up since then. Yeah, stay fresh.
This was made possible by our generous supporters on Patreon. Check out patreon.com/NWR for all the details.